there's these stories that become much bigger than the creators probably ever imagined. They impact not just lifetimes, but generations of people. The cities, worlds, and galaxies these stories build continue to expand, to add new voices.
If Kanan catches that kid, I'm gonna end it.
New iterations.
Booyakasha!
And new ideas.
Just tell A-Bomb to undo the sound effects now!
Me?
These worlds become franchises. And some franchises become so big, they can't be contained by a single medium.
So, the first thing that comes to mind when you say that, for me, is Turtles. Which was one that started as a comic, which is one of our favorite ongoings. Like, it's going great. Almost 100 issues in. I am excited for issue 100. And it has its current animated adaptation on Nickelodeon.
Right. And that happens in comics all the time. The Marvel Universe on Disney XD has shows like Ultimate Spider-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Hulk, Agents of Smash.
Word. And Disney XD also got the expansive movie galaxy Far, Far Away with Star Wars Rebels.
And you know what all these series have in common?
That low-key sounds like something that Jeff would do. Or homie, I'm saying.
I mean, Jeff do be working on some fire, but
yes,
each of the series that we mentioned so far, from Star Wars to TMNT, has been worked on by none other than our guest today, Shauna Mills. What it is, what it do, it's Wilson and Lou coming at you today with a piece on the animator Shauna Mills and her upcoming series, Boom Tag X.
Yes, sir. So Shauna Mills is a storyboard artist who has worked on shows for iconic franchises like Ben 10 and the upcoming DreamWorks Fast and Furious cartoon. All right. So she's also worked on shows for like every major cartoon network. Like, if you think about a major cartoon network, she's probably worked on them joints. Left her mark on a short of Mount Rushmore of classic franchises.
So she recently launched a Kickstarter for Boom Tag X, an animated series she's been working on in her own production company, Soda Monkey ENT, that follows Boom, a young aspiring soundmaster that's out to become a legendary soundmaster and the winner of the most epic game of tag the world has ever known.
Word. So Boom Tag X's style. How can I explain it? You know what, real talk? Even though sometimes I shy away from comparing current artists to like past artists because they don't really like that all the way, I gotta say, like, one of the best comparisons I can do when it comes to like Eastern Western influences is like how Avatar The Last Airbender took Eastern influences for a Western cartoon and mixed that up and just like created something amazing, right? So there's that. But then you got like the really dope, I want to say like graffiti style, hip hop, like anime infusion. Matter of fact, think Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo, you know what I'm saying, Watanabe situations, like that, like composite of East meets West. Boom Tag X has that, like, for real. The soul of it is pretty like spectacular for me.
And we recently got to sit down with Shauna and talk with her about her life, her career in animation, and the history of Boom Tag X. It was a pretty fly interview, and I'm glad Shauna gave us the time.
Shauna was great, and even better, she has amazing taste in TV shows. Like, outside of being our interview guest, I'm pretty certain if we had met her at like a Comic-Con or just like at a random nerd event, we would have become like instant friends.
Yeah, she was definitely hitting Wilson's list of keywords to tune in when she was talking her faves, which are a lot of my faves too, but that dude was geek.
I was geeking. But but so not only do I, you know what I'm saying, like fan on her TV show taste, she recognizes when something is special and when something is real. And she puts that into her work.
Right. So the story of Boom, the protagonist of her series, is out to find his own voice in a world where voices could carve mountains and split seas. The story of Shauna could not breathe truth into this work without her own experience finding her voice.
So, where did you grow up geographically?
That would be in in New York City. In college, I wasn't in New York, though. I was in a cornfield in, was it Pennsylvania? Yeah. It was interesting. But yeah, I'm born and raised in New York.
Oh, no, where in New York?
Spanish Harlem.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Cool. Where are you guys from?
Yeah. I'm from New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Your neighbors, enemies. We're enemies, I guess.
No. I'm from Rahway, so I'm along the train line. So, like, high school me, that was a, if I feel like it, weekend trip. But I have nothing against the city.
Oh, I see. I just remember how it was, like, anytime someone was like, oh, you got to go to Jersey. I'm like, oh, Jersey. Everybody's like, oh, Jersey. But I get it. We're not really enemies, but.
Since I'm from North Jersey, I am more New York friendly. But there's probably areas of Jersey that are not so friendly.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. But nah, I grew up in the Bronx. And then, yeah. And then, okay. Yeah, I moved to, you know, Philadelphia to go to where my folks moved. And I did high school there. But, yeah, so that's cool. Where did you go to? You said you went to school in Pennsylvania, in the sticks of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I went from high class New York City, downtown New York City to go from high school. And then in college, I was, like, next to cornfields and stuff.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah, I'm not really... I ended up dropping out, actually. No, before they were trying to get me to take out loans.
Okay.
So instead of that, I was like, screw that mess. And then I just left. Bye. You know.
Right. Fair enough. So you said, just kind of rock it with. So we saw your, like, your art style and things like that. And I'd say that I immediately fell in love with it because I got, you know, like, glimpses of, like, anime and manga type format. How did you fall in love with the medium of animation?
As a whole, I got into animation the same way most people did when they first saw, like, Dragon Ball Z. I think I saw that, and then from there, I thought it was kind of goofy looking at first, but my brother got me into it. Because I remember seeing one, I was like, what are you watching? Let's go play, you know? And then, like, the mouths aren't moving. What kind of lip flaps are happening right now? But then I think the first ever that I absolutely fell in love with it was, I would say when I first saw, I want to say Fooly Cooly, but it had to be even further than that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think when I first got into anime for really hardcore is when I saw, like, how far they were willing to go with it,
mm-hmm.
How artistic they were. I did watch Akira before I saw Fooly Cooly, so I don't want to give it all up to that show, but
got you.
But that was, like, one of the bigger influences, I guess, that got me super excited to animate.
So you said, so as you, I guess, well, biased question, really, because I love Watanabe, but when did you get into, like, Champloo and Bebop? I had no string questions for the Fooly Cooly question that you had. But I was like, you like Samurai Champloo and you like Cowboy Bebop, and I want to talk about them.
It was around the same, actually, the same time. because it was all introduced to me. But like, I had hung around with like these guys that were dear to, they're still dear to my heart. Like, even now that I think about high school, I think about those guys. Yeah, all they would do is sit around and talk about like all the new anime or different things, and just kind of like soak it up. I usually say that we were like the freaks of the Freaks and Geeks. So like they were kind of like in between, but they were definitely geeks. But you know, I was like more of like in the freaks all hanging out with the geeks. But you know, the show. I'm referencing the show, not to be too crazy, but But basically, yeah, around that age is when I started like diving in. So Fooly Cooly was like I said, was a big one. Samurai Champloo came in at college. I was still hanging out with a bunch of nerds, and they're still my boys. They're awesome. And yeah, I remember how like the merge of music and how like it captured people. Even without the visuals, like if you can just listen to the music and it mm-hmm. like take you back to the visual will put you in that place again. That's what I loved, you know, like that part right there. Yeah. So that inspired me in that way, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And while you were hanging with the freaks and not the geeks.
Well, I was hanging with the geeks and the freaks, so it was like they were all the same in my eyes. Like in high school, there was actually no cliques. I went to an art high school, and I was super, as growing up, I was super sheltered, actually. So there wasn't like much that I wouldn't get into much, but I would always hang out by myself. And in high school, that's when the loner me actually stumbled upon a few geeks. And I say freaks that like I was part of the freaks crew because I was weird. I was just a weird individual. Like if you take someone that hasn't really like socialized so much with other people, stood like basically just stayed in the house drawing all day as a kid. And then you throw them into high school. So like figuring out what I was interested in, the only reason I wouldn't classify myself as a geek is because I was soaking up all the geekiness. I was soaking up all of that from my actual geek friends who knew what they were talking about. So I was like the weird kid that hung out with the geeks. But it served me all right. I'm here now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm not mad about it. But yeah, it was tough, like growing up or like that, thinking that something was amiss. Like, something's wrong with me. I don't care, whatever. But now I feel like, I guess like don't skip college. In college, I was still rather the same, which was still tough. I think people just didn't understand it. I was meeting new people, and also, but I was also trying to kind of adapt. But yeah, so I don't know. I guess I was out of place in a way. I was still kind of out of place, but, and I still feel it to this day. But that's why I keep my nose into the work, you know, like I'm always working. But yeah, so I mean, those kind of people I always like cherish too. I always feel like the weirder you are as a kid, probably the better you are as an adult, personally. Might be biased, but whatever.
Wildest game show to hit your face in a decade. You're now watching Deli's Game of Tag, hosted by me, Deli. If you're new here, here's what you need to know. It's a massive game of tag, 99 contestants versus one. We've equipped 99 hopefuls with special weapons meant to tag and freeze one unlucky target.
Amazing.
Great. The target will have an entire world's map to hide. Contestants will have to use all of their wit and cunning to corner this elusive little mouse, who is equipped with an extra special weapon of his own. The first challenger to tag a target 5 times in a row will win a massive grand prize. The ultimate wish granted by yours truly, Master of Games, Dylan. 99 challengers, 1 target, 1 victor. Let's go!
All right, so yo, Shauna is like a kindred spirit, right? You know, like many blurs, she kicked it with the Freaks and the Geeks. Shout out to the one season of Freaks and Geek, and she fell in love with anime.
Yeah, and like us, she loves looking at story through this deeply analytical lens.
Word. But Shauna had the will to pursue these stories as a career and the strength and courage to decide that college was not the path she needed to take to get there.
Yeah, and she's also really aware of the lessons she learned along the path and does what she needs to make her dreams happen. Just like that game of tag, Shauna always has had a definitive goal that maneuvers and can be caught in many ways.
So that path that diverged away from college, you know what I'm saying, got her out of the sticks of PA, and I understand that because, you know what I'm saying, I went to school in the sticks of PA for college, and it took her all the way to California.
I stayed in New York for a while. I ended up trying to make it happen in New York. I was getting pretty much, I want to use the right word because I'm about to say something stupid. but I was pretty much like under, basically people used me. I realize, like, now I look back, like, I should have been getting paid a lot more. I should have been in better positions than I was in New York. But yeah, if they could get free work out of you, they will. So, and then there wasn't really like union like there is now. I learned so much about the industry here that I now know that a lot of the stuff that I was putting up with in New York or freelance gigs or whatever. Yeah, no. I'm a lot more valuable than that. So I had to like leave, and I didn't have much there. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to leave. It was actually around like maybe five years after college. Cause I was like 26 or 27, you know, being in this industry and like basically growing up here, because I grew up in New York, but as soon as I got here, I felt like I took a step from like college Shauna, you know, youthful, young, spirited Shauna to like, I'm a grown woman. I admit I was panicking because I had no one here. I was like, this is my last chance. You know, it's either here or I'm just going to go back to New York and not have anything. So I was like really power, like I was going for it. I guess I want to reiterate that when I was in my 20s, it was almost like I knew everything. Like I knew exactly where I wanted to go. I knew what dreams I had and where I was going to be in 5 years, things like that. So like the voice of my 20s was there. That was a youth. It was not buried, but it's when you get to, when you finally reach that goal. So like the first, it was like a tier system. So I was actually talking to someone about this, but like when you meet your challenge, you go to where you said you were going to go. Now you're there. Now what else? What's next? Right? So you're there. And so it's almost like starting over. And this time it's like the stakes are a little higher. For me, when I got to California and I finally got my my butt into the industry and I got my first gigs and stuff, it kind of happened very like slowly in a way, but like even when I got here I realized like I would have to or I felt I needed to adjust in order to get where I needed to go. And I didn't want to be like anyone, like some of these people who come in and they start like throwing smiles on. Like when you get here, you're like, why are you smiling so much? Like the cashier's smiling. You're like, what the heck? Why are you smiling so much? A place like this. I thought something was wrong with them. But then, you know, like I get into the corporate situation and you get into an elevator or you walk into a room and everybody goes quiet and weird stuff like that. And you start to kind of realize like there's some weird politics here. So you also have to kind of like maneuver in it. And I was still in the beginning trying to get my foot in and make it like grounded and stuff. And like, but I was trying to, I think I was trying too hard to be friendly to people. And it was kind of eating at my soul because part of me, like, I'm still that loner at heart. I'm still that like weird kid. It's like, I kind of don't want to know you. I just want to go and play video games and be left alone. But, you know, you're in it and you have to do what you got to do in order, you know, to make sure people know you. So it was like a weird corporate thing that eventually when I got to Star Wars, when I start working at Lucasfilm, somewhere down, like in the second year, I realized like no matter where you are in this industry, like you're not gonna like nobody, not everybody's gonna like you. You know what I mean? So why put that much energy into it? And then I just kind of went back to where I was or where I used to be. So I still have like I'm nice about it. I'm not a butt, but I'm also kind of like, if I don't want to be in a certain place, I'll just leave. You know what I mean? Or I'm not really putting so much energy into it anyway. So basically I found out that I could be myself. And it took a second because I came here and I thought I would have to kind of change it up a little bit. And try to make friends and do stuff like that and network and stuff. Some of that was good, but you don't really have to do all that. You know, I think people like us West Coasters enough, especially when we're like grumpy and stuff. It's weird. It's very weird. They like us more when we're grumpy and real. So strange.
Wilson and I are in our late 20s. Also, we've got in our real lives things going on. So, like, there's sort of this weird look ahead vibe that causes pause when you answer because you're given that type of perspective.
Mm. Okay.
Yep, very true.
Yes.
Enjoy those late 20s.
Oh, they've treated me well so far.
Yeah, it's been solid thus far, which is always a bit alarming because you're always wondering, well, dang, when's the other shoe gonna drop?
It's strange how it happens, though. Like, I thought it was a bunch of malarkey.
That's a good word.
Yeah. But it's true. Like, you think, but it's like, it's weird because, like, right on the dot, or as soon as, like, the clock is at midnight, okay. It's like, you're 30 now. And then you're like, whoa, everything looks different all of a sudden. It's so weird. So weird.
Okay. And then?
As soon as you hit like 30, a lot of things change. You do get a sense, like a better sense of who you are and you don't give a shit. But it's like when... I feel like when you hit 30, you start thinking about things differently, right? So it's almost like a new chapter, a new book, for like a chapter, like another book of Harry Potter kind of thing. So it's like new little adventures to figure out. And when it comes to creating the characters like Boom and Reboot, I had to do a lot of truth telling and like asking the right kind of questions, like honest questions.
All right. What up here, Lou? The Power You in Fiction podcast will be right back after this short break. What up, listeners? Poyuf Pod here to inform you of a great opportunity. If you remember Jerome Walford from Back From Where to Comicidal Pod, he is the creator and founder of Forward Comics and the creator of the Guan Anthology, the anthology all about the immigrant experience. Well, Jerome is putting together Guan Volume 2 and is looking for 8-page comic stories with a cover before August 30th, 2019. If you don't know what Guan is, don't worry. We had Jerome on the show back when Guan Volume 1 came out to talk a little bit about the anthology. So here's Jerome himself with the scoop.
But what we're trying to do with Guan is to bring some of that to light, you know, to speak with other comic creators who've had that experience where they either immigrated to the States or immigrated from the States elsewhere. So now they have these many layers to their identity. And we want to use Guan to create the opportunity for those stories to come to light, to show the complexities of what it means to be, you know, on this journey through life, and where sometimes it takes you to really amazing places.
So if you want to be part of this bomb anthology, head over to forwardcomics.com. That's forwardcomics.com, and email them at info@forwardcomics.com. Don't wait on these opportunities, folks. Deadline for submissions is August 30th, 2019. So if you were with us live on mic, you would have heard how much Shauna's journey through her 20s had us stop and think.
Word. Like, Lou and I are in our late 20s ourselves. So when we hear somebody who has gone through that period of their life and they tell us like what they've come away with on the back end, it's pretty trippy for us.
But there's also so much to look forward to, because these 30s for Shauna have been about using her voice that was lost in the hustle and bustle of her roaring 20s to create. And she's creating great things.
That's right. So Shauna Mills has her own production company, Soda Monkey Entertainment, and their work is looking pretty, pretty splendiferous, y'all.
Splendiferous.
Okay, so your company, when did you decide to start that, and how did you come up with the name?
That actually happened when I started trying to create the game, and I also wanted to do my own brand of apparel. And I wanted to trademark stuff with that. But so that's where it initially came out of, because I wanted to kind of make it official. And that was like when I was working at Star Wars Rebels. And yeah, so and the name, I guess it came from, so I wanted something fun, but something that sounded tasty, but also kind of like with my initials in it, S&M. So I was like,
yeah,
so you get it? So I had to keep that in there. And, like, I wanted to, and I wanted it to be fun. And I also knew that people respond to things that remind them of food. Coca-Cola does it. Pretty much most of the successful companies do it. They have like something that makes people hungry in their titles or their logos or in their name. So like with Coca-Cola, with their colors, you know, that color red is a color that makes people crave. It makes them hungry. So it's like one of the emotions that come from that. And the same thing with like McDonald's, like it makes you hungry, like the colors. Crunchyroll, you know what I mean? Makes you hungry. So I was thinking about that. And then like the monkey part was like, yeah, like monkey, whatever. Because it's fun. Monkey.
That's the level of detail and like you know, layers that we love, because I didn't catch the S and M part at all. And, you know, I was like, yeah, so that's good.
I try to put thought into like all of my actions. But yeah, the monkey part was just because it was fun sounding. I was like, monkey. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Tap color a little bit and color theory. So in this boom tag style that has people sort of not and saturated and skin tone with these super saturated colors that they're wearing.
Mm-hmm.
What's the idea of that and creating the look?
So I tend to like, personally, when there's bursts of color in things like take for New York. This is one of the things, one of the little details that I love about my home is that it's like gritty, it's riddled, it's gross, it's all these things, but it's like, when you can step back and you look at it, it's got like these bursts of colors and little spots, and you wouldn't even expect, like on the side of a pole, there might be like a worn out poster, you know, like layers of a poster, like Lord knows how long it's been there, who put that. It makes you think a little bit, you know. But it'll be like a different color, and like the buildings are different colors. Sometimes when you go to like more of like the hood areas, they're all different colors. And it's just like, I don't know. It was always attractive to me. And I don't really like a lot, like too much. I feel like when you try to like throw all the rainbows at one person. And also I was thinking about how his color, Boom's color, could face off against the others. So I did think about that as well. So if a color, a character is facing off with Boom, he'd be wearing green or something else other than Boom's colors. So when they battle, you can kind of see the difference, and you know, you always know. I wanted it to be clear.
Talk about the contrast of color in New York to the grittiness of New York. It's almost like you're giving life to something that seems more mundane. Like, I like it. I'm really big into color. I'm also kind of really big into logo design. That was like my side hustle in college. So yeah, I love this stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna admit I am not the best at either one. I try and I think I pass, but it's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this thing done, this Kickstarter done, is because I wanted to pay people that I know are better than that at it than I am to do a better job at it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Starting your own company, what is that like in recognizing your strengths and recognizing when to pull, especially since you said you like to keep your nose down and work a lot?
I guess it's the same as just knowing, being honest with yourself that if you can't, you know, if you want it to be better than this, and I'm pretty honest with myself, like, if I suck at something, I'll be like, Shauna, you suck at this. Like, it could be better. A lot of people think that I'm putting myself down. I'm not. I'm just being kind of real, and, like, only because I want to make a move towards what I want. And so it's like, if I'm too busy or if I'm, for whatever reason, I'll suck at something. And I know that I appreciate someone else's style or I appreciate how they do something. Yeah. Then I feel like it's just the same as if you couldn't like lift a jug on your own. It's the same for me. I feel like if you had to like lift a whole bunch of luggages or something, you would ask your buddy who's got two hands or something.
I very much so respect that analogy.
Right.
I think that's the most practical, yes, but also I feel like that's the most like tangible analogy that I've gotten for asking for help when it comes to something that is as, you know what I'm saying, like fluid as like creative pursuits. It's like, dog, you know, yeah. It gave me like a real life vision of like the whole concept of team lift. So that's dope. I dig that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you said Fooly Cooly. I noticed the helmet on Boomtag sort of like Conti. Is that where you drew inspiration from?
I did. I love it. So Conti was one of the influences for like the character design in its infancy. So when I first drew Boom, he wasn't even like humanoid or anything like that. He was kind of basically a ripoff of Conti. And it was like, he was just a sketch in my sketchbook. It was it. Then from at some point when I moved to California, I ended up wanting to create something that was, I guess, unique, but also still inspired by what I know. So I developed the character with a helmet that looked like Conti. So the character has nothing to do with Conti at all, but I wanted to still pay homage to that character. So yes, the helmet is sort of like my throwback, like a little bit of a wink. Well, more a big wink, because a lot of people can still see it, but yeah.
Okay, and then staying on the Fooly Cooly thread a little bit, I feel like that's such a weird one to have that be the thing that made you love animation. How old were you when you first experienced it, and what attracted you to it?
So I must have been maybe 16 when I first saw it. I was in high school, so I had to be around that age. Like prior, before I even started watching anime or even like was able to reference that show, I watched a lot of Looney Tunes. I watched a lot of Disney. I watched a lot of like different, you know, Western animations. Right. So when I saw that, I saw like the marriage between them and how the creators and the animators, actually, they took more inspiration from Western animation than most people want to give credit. But so I saw that, and I also saw like how weird they were with the pacing, how excited they got people, me especially, watching it. Just with the energy of the shots and like how each shot and how each, the framing that they would choose, it was all with purpose. So that was, to me, when I start seeing, I saw it as a masterpiece. It wasn't just style. So it's like, it actually made me look at film and animation with differently and with new eyes. So if you want to like just take inspiration, I'm not just taking inspiration from them. I'm taking inspiration from a large pool of different kinds of entertainments or different kinds of art. Fooly Cooly and the character of Conti was more of a catalyst. So,
were you watching animation and the detail you describe at 16? Is that something that started earlier? When did you start viewing composition of story with a level of detail?
I'm a weird person. So yeah, I was around that age. I think I was pretty early when I started realizing this is actually pretty special. So when I look at, I had a whole session. I would look at Korean dramas even, not just for composition, for little things that I realized that worked. And that's what I do normally. Like a lot of things people tend to ignore or like kind of overlook, I like to take my time and figure out why this might work or why this particular thing, it could be a crap show, but this one thing in it is really, really done well. And I like to figure out why that is, you know? So that's been a thing that I've done since that age, I guess. It's probably why I was like not the cool kid, but yeah, a lot of that stuff I just kind of utilized. I learned to embrace a lot of the weird quirks that I guess I had, you know, in order to make things work for me.
Yeah, we can get that. That's I think the very analytical lens that you talk with, it's right up our alley. You're in our wheelhouse. That's how we operate when we read, watch, listen to anything. So
That's why we do this. So yeah. It's like right up our alley.
Yup.
Sweet.
And when did you start getting into art if you went into a whole art high school?
Oh, as a whole, let me see. Because originally I could actually argue that I still sort of don't like doing it. Don't like animating. But, well, that's the way it's originated. But I love watching. So, but the thing is, it's like when you're so impatient and you want to create something, you want to see something that you want to see, it kind of prompted me to get over my dislike for creating or producing animation to actually produce it. But yeah, so I guess that's how I became kind of like, or animator, I would say. That's how I got into animation.
Okay. And then you said that you don't love animation, but you realize that you've got to create the stuff that you're not seeing. So then there's two questions. How did you end up in animation with your art specifically? And then what things aren't you seeing that you want to bring to the medium?
Yeah. So like I said, you already know, I love the old stuff, the old anime. And a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing right now that they're supposed to be like, I guess, merging with the Western networks and stuff right now. So a lot of the stuff that they're making that supposedly look like anime doesn't really feel like anime to me. I know they have a few shows that are in development now. But without naming names, there are shows that supposedly are influenced by anime. It's just, they're kind of not really paying as much as respect as they should to the actual form of anime. You know what I mean? Like when I think about anime, I think about like pushing animation limits and stuff like that. And mind you, yeah, like it is something that is coined as like Japanese animation, right? That's like just the way they say anime, or animation, but I feel like if they're going to really pull from Japanese style or like just why are they not pulling out the best parts of this style? You know, like if you look at something, you can point out the best parts of something. That's what you want to take. And I'm getting old and I'm realizing I want to watch stuff on my dying bed. Like I want to watch TV. You know what I mean? Would you watch this show as your last show? Like would I watch Foolie Cooley? Yeah. Would I watch Samurai Champloo? Yes, I would. I would do that in a hurry. Yes, thank you. But, like, the stuff that is coming out right now, I feel like it's lacking artistry. I feel like it's lacking passion in it. What they told you it was going to be is exactly what it is. And then the end, there hasn't really been, like, deeper context that I've seen come out of any of the stuff that that they're putting out. And, you know, even with my stuff having like a little message in there or whatever, the key thing that I want to pull out is that I want to have fun. Like, I want viewers to go in kind of like expecting a little something cool, but then coming out with like, oh shit, you know? Yeah. And just feeling something that like makes them want to watch it on their dying bed.
Yeah, the way you're talking about Avatar, the way you talk about the other shows that you consume, and that need of weightiness, that need of three dimensionality, it reminds me specifically of one of our other interview guests, and Ron Wimberly, and he gave us a really dope quote that what was it? The fantastical is a function of the real.
The function of the fantastical is to give perspective on the real.
Yeah, and I think the desire for you as a storyteller from catching it, you know, just from the conversation that we're having now is for you to like slip in that real, but you know, not make it this like propaganda kind of thing, or just kind of like, here's a message that I'm beating over your head, but also here is something that's not like an empty calorie snack for you, because you just kind of come away at the end saying like, damn, I want to kill myself.
Yeah. Yeah, because like, to me, it could come off too corny if you do it like that. And by the way, I love Ron. I gotta see where he's at this year, because I know he's been like going back and forth from New York to LA. But yeah, that's my homie. Yeah, dude. Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm not going to try. I'm going to do it. But for sure, this is a journey, because this is like my first venture into becoming like an executive producer and showrunner, you know? Well, I'm really happy that people dig where it is right now.
So the journey, can you tell us about this journey from like conception to launching the Kickstarter?
Sure. So I created the character. It started out as a sketch, a sketch up of a character. And when I got to California Cartoon Network, I was kind of advised to pitch a show, and at the time I was like working fully on like on my Violator Union thing, which is more like adult themed, and it has like criminals and stuff like that. But so I started to kind of create the story around this one sketch, and I started redesigning it even. And I guess going back to how I would shift or try to adapt to where I was, his whole design was completely different. So I did originally make his hat, like his, I ended up doing like his helmet thing coming off and all that, but then his hair was spiky. He looked like a typical anime thing, but then I thought, let me go rounder. So I tried to kind of like fit a style that you would see that they're using in Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon like today. So it could have looked like Steven Universe if I was really going for it. But they rejected it. And I was like, okay, that's actually not bad. Because, apparently you go through 7 rejections before you get like pass. That's the norm. And so that was like my first 2 rejections. But then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to even try to go with them. I might not even like them so much. If they don't like it now, if they can't see it, I'll just work on it myself. So gradually I just started seeing it as like an indie thing. So it did start off like an indie pilot, indie short kind of thing. And then from there, when I got into, when I went up to Lucasfilm to work on Star Wars, I ended up being in like the realm of game designers and stuff. So I was like, yeah, let me make a game. Like, I could hit all the birds with one stone. That'd be great. So I started designing and pretty much developing a game. I even started programming, and I did all that other stuff that goes with gaming. And then I fell off again because I was like, okay, I'm coming back to LA, and maybe I should just focus on the animation. So I started doing that again, with the story and with the help of my friend, also my partner right now. Like, she's amazing. She's been helping me kind of like flesh out, story and a lot of the holes that I had when you create something and you're like, oh, I love this so much, I want to keep it. But some things are like, man, you should just let go. So I, it was actually pretty healthy that I waited that long to kind of to figure out the story some more. And then, so I guess like now I started to do I animated, I directed, I written, I did it all. And I created the trailer myself with some help from like artist friends. And so that's where I am. Then we did the Kickstarter. It started in like a month or so ago.
Awesome. Kickstarter also ends on my birthday, so I really hope that you succeed so I can say it's a birthday present.
Yeah. It would be great. If it does, if it doesn't, then... it's not all lost. I'm a woman of options, so I like to have options. And like, even when going in, I always wanted to make sure that no matter what, like, I was able to complete the pilot. So like right now, at the worst case scenario, I would pretty much take the whole burden on myself during my hiatus from work, and then have the people that I've chosen to animate and keep it polished and stuff kind of on payroll, but like more of a commission style. So that's at bare minimum just to get it done. And then we already have connections to where we need to go to get it distributed and stuff. So it's like, yeah, that's like the worst case scenario. But on the, mid case scenario, or like somewhere in the middle, I feel like partnering up with the right partner, being who has like access to the right people, themselves, it'll be even more fruitful. Probably a little bit better than just going through Kickstarter. Because even with Kickstarter, it'll be mostly me and my company just doing it solo. So it'll be a little bit better to go with another company and partner. So, yeah. I mean, in any case, I feel like allowing people to pass judgment on it right now, getting the audience into it and seeing how people react, that is super valuable for me, especially. Like, I want to know, because I don't want to, like, put out something and just, like, tell people, oh, yeah, people loved it and nobody's really, like, said that they liked it. I'm just lying. So, yeah.
All right. Pivoting a little bit, what is it like as a Black woman in the animation creative world?
It is. So it's very interesting because I feel like I get more resistance because I'm a woman than I am a Black woman, like just being Black. Maybe I feel like being a Black woman is definitely like the reason why it can get pretty intense sometimes. But I think the women aspect, the women part is the part that weighs most for me. personally, that's the, out of my experiences. Yeah, because I feel like a lot of the times, as much as like I see my brothers and stuff, they get into it, or they're like seen as dangerous looking or scary. Because I know a few who have left jobs because of that kind of stuff. As a Black woman, I get it from a lot of the times, though. A lot of the stuff that I create, people don't really associate with me. They think that someone else has done it, or they look to the side. Because I've literally been at conventions where that's happened. I would be like tagged along, like a friend of mine would be tagged along, or whoever I was dating was tagged along, and they look straight to him. To be like, oh, well, you know, like, oh, how, you know, asking him all the questions. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, it comes with some of the perks, because then partially I don't want to talk anyway. So I'm like, okay, you could deal with that. I'm going to go over here now. But, yeah, but it's definitely insulting. It's definitely insulting. Everyone. So including, I can get that kind of pushback from my own kind, brothers, you know what I mean? So it's like a little bit of an add-on, being like, but if I say, if I was a Black woman, a Black man, I guess my brothers, the brother that came at me wrong wouldn't have done that the way he did. So yeah, things like that. Yeah, so that's a little bit of an experience.
Now, in terms of having a realm to create when work, you know, when the tensions of work are a bit too, they seem unbearable, then you can like pour that like those feelings into this passion piece. What do you generally do to, I'd say, like, recharge your creative batteries?
I stay quiet. I tend to like solitude. I feel like that's like my go-to place. It's where I get to think. It's where I get to like look at a wind brush into a tree or something, you know? Like, I like being able to take in all of that, you know? Like, you have to be able to take in the world in order to like dispel it too. As an artist, I feel like that's super special mm-hmm. for us. In a way, we're kind of like recorders, like the character Reboot, because we're able to kind of like sit there and take it all in and then dish it back out as art. And I feel like, yeah, solitude is usually my go-to because of that. These days, it's been a little tough because my house is now... is like occupied by myself and also my partner. But yeah, I think finding a little space somewhere is always important.
So how have you been finding that space now, you know, since you don't have the immediate like physical solitude of living on your own?
Oh, I yell at her to get away from me so I can have silence. Yeah, I need silence. that's the best way sometimes they don't, not everyone understands, but then you know you gotta have them understand, so
that's real. A very direct response. Right. fair enough. So you said actually touching back on when you said in high school you felt like something was amiss, and then, you know, in college you didn't feel all the way like you fit in, and now you still don't always feel like you fit in all the way. Like, how do you either A, channel that I'd say like quirkiness into your piece? I guess that's the first part of the question. And then B, like, what kinds of fiction do you use to, I want to say, like work as like a salve for you to be like, oh no, like I can see myself in these characters, so I know that there's some, they're like parts of me, you know, like fit in this world.
Yeah, that's funny that you ask that. I feel like I'm rediscovering at this point in my life, rediscovering myself a lot more and rediscovering the characters I'm creating. I remember in my 20s when I would look at a character and I'd see exactly who I wanted him to be. And I in turn saw exactly who I was. When it comes to creating the characters like Boom and Reboot, I had to do a lot of truth telling and like asking the right kind of questions, like honest questions about myself at this point now, because I'm definitely like I've grown out of older characters that I've created. I still love them. I still have characters that I love and they're still in there. They're still in me. But these two characters, one being very still unsure about his own voice all of a sudden, because in my 20s, I was like super sure of my everything. I was just like, I don't care. But I got to figure out this career thing. I got to maneuver in this hostile environment. I got to like figure it out on my own and stuff. You know, I have no backup, things like that. So a lot of that actually, it causes a voice to waver. I took a step back and I had to realize like, that's where this character is. Boom, you know, his voice and him looking and seeking for his voice. And it's not necessarily the same as like when you're younger and you're thinking, oh, I need to find my voice. Nah, like you have your voice, but like sometimes things like interrupt life, like, and then you tend to doubt yourself, and it happens to everyone at every age. So I had to kind of be honest with myself. So I'm developing this character as I find myself out in a way.
Okay, I dig that.
Yes. That makes me want to ask, how does voice manifest itself in this world that you're creating beyond Boom?
Okay, so now we're getting to the part where I'm like, should I be telling every bit of it? I'm just going to say that voice is very important. And I want to kind of reveal how it's displayed. Rather than telling, I want to show you and show everyone. So, it's definitely like his wavering confidence in himself and just understanding like where his next steps are going to be. It all depends on how, like, just like with anyone, how committed, how convicted are you to just like blasting out, like just getting loud and just going for it. Just say what you gotta say. You don't wait for anyone. You just do it. You know what I mean? Like, I think if I could give that kind of, if I can like give anyone that kind of advice, it would be that.
My name is Boom. I'm a boy without a voice, living in a world where voices can carve mountains and split seas. My life was pretty quiet. Well, up until I entered this dangerous competition. The winner scores the craziest grand prize ever. One wish, granted by Deli, the master of games. My wish? To have a voice so great that I could become a legendary soundmaster. Little did I know, I'd face up against opponents that had the abilities to use sound and light in ways I've never seen before, and ultimately become the target of a game that would determine the fate of the whole world. Suddenly, things are getting way too complicated. This is the story about my journey to becoming an awesome legendary soundmaster.
All of this, Shauna's life, her career, her desire to make hits, and most importantly, her voice, have been infused into the world of Boomtag X.
Yo, it's truly a labor of love and a story that she's developed with an intense amount of care. So Boom and Reboot are like her children, right? And like a parent, she could not help but put pieces of herself into the story.
Yeah, and that's part of why I believe in this project so much. Besides that fire animation style you were talking about, the story is honest. And I think the most honest works of fiction cannot be separated from the views and the reality of the creator. So without further ado, I'm excited for this part of the conversation where we get to talk about the work.
So aside from Boom, you know, and you have your, now we have like your many supporting cast members, which one would you say was the most difficult to, I guess, like fully realize? Like, which one of those characters was the one where you're like, I just don't know about X, and you know, this is giving me this issue, but then it came to like fruition where you're like, wow.
It was definitely the main character. Then.
Okay.
I know you said anyone other than him, but it was definitely him.
Okay.
I felt like the hardest. Yeah. Like I said, he's like me trying to figure out who, where I am, who I am, and all that, where I am now, where I'm going now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, he's still trying to figure it out. At some point, I even thought, oh, he's my brother, you know, trying to find his voice and things like that.
Okay.
But No. I feel like I can't put all that blame on him. He's definitely, I've got inspiration from my brother for his personality and journey and stuff. But I feel like I couldn't tell a really good story if it wasn't coming from me. So
right.
I can see it now.
Okay. Wait, you were about to say something, Lou, right?
Bouncing back and forth. So from the trailer, we get a kind of high-level idea of who Boom is, but you've mentioned Reboot like 3 times, and outside of her character design, I know nothing about her. What can you say?
Okay, yeah, so she is more of a little bit of like the 20-year-old me, I guess. The one that had all the answers, didn't care about anyone. And I feel like she could learn a bit from like the older me, which is Boom. I felt like, well, she's definitely a little bit, she's like type that will dive in kind of thing, but she's super smart and super worldly. She has her own rules, like a set of rules that she follows, without like regard for other people kind of thing. Yeah. But she's also a really, really good listener. So she is the one that can hear his voice, can hear him. And that's why they get along so well.
So did the world come first and you sort of stuck Boom in the world? Or did you explore Boom and then everything around him fell into place?
I did. I created Boom. He was very, like, he was still kind of flat. And then I would look at him, and I would look at him and I'd say, I don't like you. That happened quite often. You know, like, when you, there were always moments, I don't know if you guys feel this, but, like, when you create characters and you're, like, you're freaking in love with this character, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you think about them. It's like, I used to say that it was like falling in love with like this made up character. Cause it's like, you want to know more about them. You know, you want to see them eating your favorite dish, seeing how they respond to it. You want to laugh when they respond to it funny or whatever. It's like all these things. It's just like the relationship. It's like with a real person. With Boom, it took me a second. Like, I think I was forming an idea of him. It's the same as when people fall or try to like fall in love with an idea. It was like an idea of him. But what I needed to do was to kind of let him be as frustrated as I am. You know, he's like mad. He's not mad. He's just like, he has attitude. He has, you know, things that you might actually not associate with him at first glance.
Okay.
I get people tell me I'm sweet. I'm like, oh, that is so sweet. Thank you. But I'm like, because they don't really know me. Because there's days where I'm just like, I've had it, and I'll let people know. And then I'm just very honest about it. So it's like my sweetness comes out in honesty. My honesty can also come out, and it seems like it's rude or mean, but it's not. It's just me being honest. And I feel like what a perfect way. Then I realized like that, you know, that's who he is. Imagine not having a voice and then, or like saying things when people, no one can hear you. Like, it's almost as if like you're butt naked, but nobody could tell. You know, wouldn't you just run around, but like if you were invisible, wouldn't you run around butt naked? Like, it's kind of like that. I start seeing it. I'm like, he's not a sorry case. He's not like using that. He's not like a sad and, you know, silent because he's like he might be lacking confidence in his voice, but he's definitely got some attitude, and he will say some shit about you to your face kind of thing, but you just can't hear it. So that kind of thing, you know what I mean? It's like, that's what I would do. So I had to look at it. I was like, yeah, actually, I like this guy now.
Naked, I was wondering, like, what the path is like for you now in your 30s versus your path in your 20s?
So forward would mean, yes, for myself. I want this show to be, I want it to fly off. I want a show. I want an entire 6th season. And I also want to kind of disappear. It was like, I also want to make it and then kind of leave the U.S. So that's my journey. I kind of want to go into obscurity someday. In the future. Yeah, the goals. But leave something very good, very tasty behind.
For real.
Would you still create for the world in solitude? Or are you just like making stuff and chilling out somewhere on a private island?
So, private island. Oh, you form dreams, sir. So with that, I can't really say. Like, I'd say right now, for sure, I feel like, yeah, I would totally love that, but you can never really tell. I was talking to someone that was older than me. She was talking about how, like, you go through tiers, and, like, the 30s, you get to a point where you've met your first goal, and then you make a new one. And then when you get to that goal, which is, you know, like, the goal that I'm striving for, you make a new one, a new one. So it's like, I couldn't really say. Maybe I would. I could see me working on the world or creating more. I would love to make more, but I just don't want to be here to do it. So I think once I've gotten that far, I'd be able to give a better answer.
We'll schedule the after you go big interview.
I'm the big time interview. I'm big time now.
I'll always be open. So,
Okay, is there anything about yourself or Boomtag that you didn't get to talk about that you would like to talk about?
Overall, I think we covered everything, but overall is that this is it's going to be a show that is fun. It's going to be a lot of action. There's going to be a lot of funny action because I love like Jackie Chan. I love old like kung fu movies, things like that. Like I love that stuff. And so I definitely want it to be focused on that. Like I want it to be focused on like old, like the stuff that you've seen like in Dragon Ball Z, like Hunter x Hunter. Like that was also another inspiration for me because it was like has like some sort of like schizophrenic kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Where I don't know if you've watched it, but Hunter x Hunter starts off, the newer one anyways, it starts off very like sunny. It feels like almost Pokemon-ish. And then the next time you see it, somebody's getting their head bitten off. And you're like, what in the heck? But it's that kind of schizo thing that I really love when shows do. Like there's a, you like make no mistake about it thing, you know, like this is a show about a kid and it, you know, we're encouraging kids to watch it and we want them to do it. But overall, this is something that I've built for myself, even something that I like. I like those things. I like when a little bit of violence kind of like brings a character to face certain things about himself, or you know what I mean? Like, I like that. I like fights. I like battles. I like when I like seeing that. So that's that, I guess.
And there you have it, you listeners. We just hipped you to a classic in the making. You can thank me later.
Man, like, I'm excited. So, of course, it'll sound biased because we just went through a whole interview and talked to an amazing creator, and it's our show. But really, I am excited to see Boomtag X in its full formation, you know, like a full out season one and the world being built. And I'm excited to see what Shauna and the creative team that she develops can bring to the table. I feel as though this has one of those like instant classics in the making. So, yeah, no pressure, Shauna, but we're rooting for you.
Fair game. We waiting on it. Waiting on you to be great. But you can contribute to Boomtag X Kickstarter through July 13th, which is my birthday. So if you were thinking about getting Lou a present, just go over there where you can pledge to help them complete the short and maybe get a couple perks.
Facts. And if you don't catch the Kickstarter, right, because you might have listened to this a little bit late, you know, after July 13th, you'd be like, damn, I missed it. Oh, man, my coins could have went to something amazing. Don't fret, y'all. Don't fret. Y'all can follow all of Soda Monkey's work on their website. It is www.sodamonkeyent.com, or you can, you know, just follow them on Twitter or IG, official Boomtag.
Yeah, and Shauna herself can be found on social media, that's IG, Facebook, Twitter, as Lazy Mills.
that's she's good with the names, man. I gotta say, she's good with them.
Soda Monkey name origin was, I had the Weebay face on when she explained that.
Fast and Lazy Mills is just like so smooth. But yeah. So as for us, you know, you can follow us on Twitter at PoyifPod, PoyifPod. PoyifPod. That should be on Twitter and on IG. And you can follow me, Wilson, at Word to Wilson.
And I'm Lou at Shens DeGrio.
And this has been the Power of You in Fiction podcast.
The nonfiction podcast about fiction and its very real effects on our lives.
Peace.
We out.